My name is Ashley, and this is Let's Talk Dispatch.
You're gonna do it. Do it really well.
And I believe the world needs more dispatchers.
In the mud, blood,
plus
beer.
Years that I'm not working 4th of July. 4th of July.
Hey, community policing, right? What about community dispatching?
So on this show, with the help of my guests, we will educate, empower, and support the heroes behind the headset. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode here on Let's Talk Dispatch with me, Ashley, the raspy dispatcher. We just got back from vendoring and presenting at Cal Nina. It was my first time presenting in person, and I have to say it was a really, really good time. So shout out to everyone who attended my session day three after lunch. That's a tough time to be willing to learn and to present. So to everybody, I mean, I had about 15, 20 people in the session. So it was a lot of fun. And I'm just so appreciative for all the folks who support me online, support me in person, come out to these conferences. You know, the best thing about these conferences is that the people who are attending them are wanting to learn. They're wanting to bring information back to their centers in order to make them better. So shout out to you if you attended Cal Nina or any conference last year or this year. You're doing great work to make our centers better and improve the atmosphere for all of our coworkers. So today's guest is entering their 23rd year dispatching and their current role as a shift supervisor, but they have over 31 years of experience in public safety. They started at 16 as a volunteer firefighter. My guest today, RJ. Hey, RJ.
Hi, Ashley. How are you?
Glad to be here. How are you?
I'm ecstatic. One quick thing before I get started. We share a mutual friend who's now my boss, so I just wanted to kick this out. Warning. The statements and views that I'm about to express are my own personal opinion. They do not reflect the views of my boss, Fairfax County, my wife, or the Raspy Dispatcher. So any resemblance to actual persons, places, or events, purely coincidental. There we go. There's the warning.
I love that. So if any of the bosses are listening, just play that back on repeat a little bit.
Yeah. So Drew Clark.
Like
Drew Clark is now
Drew Clark, yes, director. Fairfax County. He just came back over there. He is amazing.
He's a real good guy, hard worker. And so it's hard to keep up with him. He is the Energizer Bunny and he just doesn't stop. But I know he's a fan and watchers and he doesn't know I'm doing this. So it's only a matter of time.
I love Drew. I just saw him at, where were we? The Nene's Amber Lee conference, Be the Difference. They were presenting there. So I had to hang out with him a bit. And I know he just came back to Fairfax County not too long ago. So super excited that to have one of his people on, you know, so that's awesome.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. Hey, I do have one quick question for you, though.
Please.
I know you are the Raspy Dispatcher and stuff like that. Is that a moniker? And it's obvious as to why. But is that somebody give that to you or did you kind of self name yourself after some comments or something?
Oh, well, I kind of embraced the raspy. I actually was diagnosed with papillary thyroid cancer when I was around 10. And yeah, so it wrapped around my vocal cord, headed into my esophagus. So it paralyzed one of my vocal cords. And in that experience, when I played basketball growing up and I had a hard time getting air into my airway because of how it was sitting in that paralyzed state. And so I chose to have a surgery that kind of opened my airway a bit. Like they shaved a little slit into my vocal cord. So the raspiness came out my senior year of high school. And just ever since then, you know, my voice has been raspy. So I thought it was only fitting to be the raspy dispatcher.
I didn't know some officers were giving you, it's that raspy dispatcher. And you just kind of clung on to it or something.
No. I've had an officer ask me if I've smoked a pack a day, and I've had officers I always say to the officer, like, oh, you know, Stevie Nicks vibe. Like, I just like the raspy, you know, a little bit. I have had some people bring me cough drops, which is helpful still, even though I'm not sick.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, great tagline, because I'm horrible with names. So if you ever get out this way on the East Coast, I'm just going to be like, what's up, Raspy? Because I'll never
remember. Hey, I'll take it. Even my license plate's personalized, says Raspy in a certain form. So, you know, we're embracing it. We're claiming it for sure.
Excellent. That's the way to do it.
Awesome. So, RJ, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into public safety, and what that journey was like for you.
Short version is going to be my dad, and there's a roundabout way as to why. He was kind of a radio tech kind of geek guy when he was little, and you could order those things from the Sears and Roebuck catalog. He would build his own radio kit, and then just going on. And he, in the 60s, to avoid being drafted, he joined the Army. And I guess when you join versus being drafted, you get kind of, you go through the skills test. And he became a radio tech in the Army, setting up radio systems, kind of monitoring them, that sort of thing. That was his specialty when he was in the Army. And when he got out, we had the CBs and all the cars, like the Dukes of Hazzard and the Smokey and the Bandit. And we had just all those sorts of things. He was always techs and radio. So growing up, he actually worked for Fairfax County too. He got, I can't remember exactly when he got hired as Fairfax County. He was a dispatcher too. But through some, it's one of those things that wasn't for him. So he developed high blood pressure and some health problems. So he really couldn't do the job, and he went on to do some other things in the county and filled out his career doing that sort of thing. But through the course of it, I guess because of the dispatch skill where we lived, he joined the volunteer fire department and was more of a support kind of guy there. But he always had the scanners on in the cars, and he had the scanners on in the house. So I've always heard it and had it in the background. And I was riding with him in the car. I was 16 the fall after I turned 16. And he starts taking some turns, and, you know, he goes, oh, they got a brush fire up here. They need some help. And so a couple of us got some rakes, and we were raking the line around the brush fire and helping the crews that were there. And he goes, well, what'd you think of that? Was that fun for you? And I was like, yeah, it wasn't bad. He goes, you want to think about doing it? And I was like, okay, sure. And so that's how I kind of got my foot in the door with that, because out where I live, it's very rural. And we, you know, it's all volunteer community. Even to this day, the county, I don't live there anymore, but where I had volunteered, it's still an all volunteer agency. The county's has no stoplights. The county has no 7-Elevens. It's still just a small agricultural community. But that's how I got my start in it. Then through the course, I wasn't very good in school, in high school and stuff like that. I was, you know, a C student in school. So there was no college for me in the, I did some community college, but through the course of those, just everything I had done into that kind of led me into, I wanted a career where I would have a retirement. And I thought I was going to go the fire department route. And I was like, before I got into the fire department, I'm like, man, let's start dispatching. Because I volunteered with some people that were also dispatchers in different agencies. So that's how I got into Fairfax County. 11-month process led me to where I am now. And that's kind of the process of how it took place. I didn't start until I was in 26 or so with Fairfax County, but you know.
Before we continue, we wanted to take a moment to thank our partners at Prepared. You can learn more about the awesome support and technology Prepared provides to first responders by heading to prepared911.com. Partners like Prepared help to continue our mission of supporting, empowering, and educating the heroes under the headset. You can learn more about our resources and partnerships by heading to theraspydispatcher.com. Now let's get back to the show. That's amazing. So do you think that doing the volunteer firefighting and being around that early on helped you as you transitioned into the dispatcher role for Fairfax County?
Yeah, I had a lot of background, especially the fire side. I had to learn the police side, but having the background on the fire side made it a lot easier because when they're trying to teach you what the different equipment is, I already knew it. Mm-hmm. And the weird part about it is I don't know if you've ever heard anybody say this, based off of the background and growing up, as I look back on it now, almost 50, mm-hmm. Is my whole process and step was kind of a divine intervention into what I'm doing now. Cause I grew up with the scanners in the background and growing up and listening and the annoying box that made all the noise on the other side of the room. I worked nights in a grocery store out of high school. So I learned what it was like to be short staffed, to learn what it was to work nights. Mm-hmm. After that, I left and I worked for, I sold kitchen and bath cabinetry mm-hmm. by phone. I was an inside sales guy. So the companies would call. So I learned how to talk to people on the phone, build relationships, customer bases, that sort of thing. And then after that, I left from there and I went to a kitchen countertop company. For building new homes and remodels, that sort of thing. But that, a lot of that was driving around. So I'm driving around learning geography and where I'm going to work without mm-hmm. even knowing it. Mm-hmm. So when I went into work for Fairfax County, I knew the geography fairly well. Mm-hmm. Most of the places I knew how to talk to people on the phone. So it was all a dynamic that kind of led me to it. And I'm very fortunate that I dumbed into this job.
So what was it like for you in the beginning? I know having that familiarity with, you know, geography is huge. It's one of the hardest things, I think, to learn about your area that you're working in, no matter where you're working. Geography is, especially if you don't live there, if you don't have any history in that mm-hmm. area, it's tough to learn. So other than like already knowing the geography, learning the job itself, what was that like for you in the beginning?
There's a lot of learning out of it, because Fairfax County has a very good base for everybody to learn. Everybody gets hired in as a call taker, and then they add the other skills going on. I know a lot of agencies can't do it that way just because of the staffing and their size of what they do. But everybody kind of comes in as a call taker, and you're kind of guided the process. And there's lots of classrooms time. There's lots of on-the-job training when you're working with the trainer. And then eventually you kind of start to work on your own. And it's it takes about a year process to not get cut loose and get on the job, but to get into it and feel comfortable with what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not a overnight thing. And that's a lot of people get scared about it, but get with the right agency and you'll be developed along to kind of get comfortable. And once you got comfortable with the call taking and your quality assurance made you sound like you knew what you're doing, then they would start working with you to get the next steps, at least for us.
Yeah, it's so true, because one thing, like, training is so long in this line of work. And one thing I tell people is, like, you just have to get through all that training and then you get to really find, like, your way of dispatching, you know, mm-hmm. always within policy, of course, but when our trainers are training us, they tend to train us the way they do it, you know, and then you switch to another trainer, then they retrain you the way they do it. And everyone just kind of teaches you the way they're most comfortable doing this job. And that's tough for someone to learn how to do this job in everyone's way they like doing it. So once you get released from training and you're told you can do this job and you really get to settle in to how you want to do these things. Mm-hmm. That's the fun part. I mean, that's really like the fun part when you're off training, you're able to actually learn and do the job on your own and still have folks to ask for help. Cause I don't think there's a day, a week, a month that passes that I'm not asking someone a question. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the fun part, I think.
Yeah, very much so. Sorry, brain freeze on that.
No, you're fine. Okay. No worries. Well, jump, do you remember? Oh, I'm like dropping stuff now too. Come on. Do you remember any early calls for service or any of your first calls?
Yeah, I call it my cocktail story list. If I'm out hanging out with people or whatever, they're learning me. I can go through any or all of these. I'll let you decide. When I was in training, was in Fairfax in the DC area during the DC sniper. So I took one of the calls. Linda Franklin, the late FBI employee that was killed at the Home Depot. If you ever watched the documentary on the DC sniper, I was one of the first. I took the first call on it. It wasn't from her or family. It was from a witness that saw it take place and that sort of thing. I was in training. I almost had to testify in court over that one. I came home from work one day and there was a message from a detective going, "Hey, we've added you to the witness list." And I got really nervous because I'm barely out of training and I have to go to court. And then they called me back about a month later and said, "Never mind." So
yeah, it's all on the recording. Why you got to go in there?
You would be surprised how many times we're subpoenaed to court.
It's crazy. But I mean, so DC sniper case, I mean, it's one of those cases that I think most people are familiar with, even if you're not in a true crime vibe, you know, person. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just one of those cases that were all over the news. Like, even if you were out of the area. And that is just how relevant our job is. And I think, you know, people aren't really, they think about the event, right? Like, the thing that's happening. And once it's hitting the news, like, we've already been dealing that for X amount of minutes, X amount of hours, you know? So the idea that any call that drops into your ear can just be this massive event at any moment is telling, especially for you. You said you were kind of early in your career and you get one of these infamous cases out of that area. It's how do you compartmentalize that? How do you, looking back, like handling a big call like that, what was that like for you?
I think I was so early into it and kind of naive to the situation that I didn't really grasp how big of an event that was, because it was, we were in it and around it, and the global fishbowl of the event really didn't kind of dawn on me. The cool part of, you talked about how the news picks up on it later and then the public hears about it later. One of the other events, it was another shooting during a day work time several counties away, and it was kind of broadcast over the regional police line. We call it PMARS, Police Mutual Aid Radio System. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of broadcasted over that. And my trainer at the time, after that, was okay, we've got this event. All right. Units are starting to set up to work up the roadblocks and stuff like they set up and stuff like that. He goes, "Okay." He goes, "I want you to get up. I want you to go to the bathroom. I want you to grab a snack. And I want you to get something to drink." He goes, "Because once this hits the news, we're not getting up for hours." And it would. It was just inundated. And I've never seen, it's very few times that I've seen it like that, where the phone lines, you've got everybody working, everybody, nobody's getting up. Everybody's answering call after call after call. And the calls waiting aren't going away. They are just piling on.
No, that's a really good point. And to your trainer, applauds to them for like, hey, well, this is a, because you're going to remember that forever, right? You now have that in you, like when something's about to pop off. And sometimes you can't prepare. Sometimes it just popped and you're in it. But just that knowledge that they passed to you, and that we're passing the people listening now, is just, I think, unmatched, you know, having that type of knowledge passed on to you, because it's true, especially when you think of like things like school shootings or things where people's family members are going to want updates and want to know what's happening. And while you're in it, like those people are calling us too. So people who aren't involved at all, have no information that is helpful to our units at that moment, are inundating our centers as well. So for the citizens who are listening, like, we get it. We know if it was our loved ones, we would want to hear from, you know, the police department or the fire department, whatever type of situation it requires what's going on. But if you don't have any updated information, you are inundating our lines and making it hard for those dispatchers to get to the people who are in it and needing that help.
Yeah. Yeah. it's wanting to know, and they desperately need that information too. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. we're almost the last to get the updates to be able to pass it along. So, that horrible situation.
Yeah. You've been at Fairfax County for a long time. Your dad was at Fairfax County. I would say that's a good resume builder for Fairfax County, being a good agency and, having a good experience.
Yeah. I kind of, well, Fairfax County carried the reputation. So when I was coming out and I thought, oh, I'll apply for a firefighter job, whatever, everybody in the region wanted to be the Fairfax firefighter because they had such an awesome reputation. And I got into it, and through the course of things, and I had applied for a little bit, but then I backed out for some personal reasons, and I just never applied again because by the time I was a couple of years into this, I just said, you know what? I'm not in the heat. I don't have to go out in the rain, and I'm making good money, and I think I'm good where I'm at. So that's kind of how I ended up staying. It just it's a good situation, and I enjoyed being here. My other call, I know you're going to love this one. I got hit on by a stripper.
I'm sorry, you what?
I got hit on by a stripper.
Okay, how'd that go?
he had called because her roommate was having almost a the mental emergency kind of thing. Mm. And you know, she was looking for the suicide hotline. Mm. And I was about a year in or so. And she was just looking for the suicide hotline number just to kind of call to get him some help and finding some place to get him treatment, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to her, and my instance is, okay, I have to send the police. I have to put a call. And she's like, no, I don't want to call in. I just want some information. So, and then he's in the other room and he hears her talking. So he kind of pops his head in the door every so often. And he's like, who you talk to? You talking about me? And blah, blah. And she's like, no, I'm just chatting with my friend. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the training, and we were always taught don't lie because they'll catch you in the lie. So I just start feeding her information in her ear real quick so she can spit it back to him like she's talking to her friend. No, this is my friend, blah, blah, blah. And he does this and he's doing that. And I'm on the phone. I'm not known for being very long on the phones.
Yeah.
Okay, 5 minutes. Tell me what your problem is. 5 minutes. We'll figure it out. I'm on to the next one. I ended up talking to this girl for about 35 minutes or so while the paranoid roommate is trying to figure things out. So I have divulged a lot of information, which I probably shouldn't have to protect myself. And through the course of it, she starts telling me what she does. And she says she's a dancer. And I'm like, oh, Kennedy Center. And she's like, no, Good Guys. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then at the end of it, she's like, come visit me. And I'm like, 26. Okay. Dating a stripper would be cool. But I'm also starting this relationship with who will eventually be my wife. And I'm going, probably shouldn't.
You probably made the right decision.
Well, I know I made the right choice, but it's still just in the back of the head going, maybe.
I do remember one of my early calls when I was at my first agency. It was like a verbal argument. And the lady was calling in on the guy, and you can hear the guy in the background yelling at her. And I'm like, well, what's going on? Like, how do you know this man? Like, what is this? And she was like, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm a prostitute and he's not paying. And she's like, I did my job and he's not paying. And I was like, okay, well, they're on the way to assist you with this argument. So we get to talk to a lot of interesting people who are doing, interesting things with their lives, and we get to kind of be the middleman to get them some assistance if they need it.
Very much.
So. Oh my gosh. Do you have any more stories?
One of my favorites, I saved an elderly couple $14,000.
Oh.
So I had taken this call, and it was an older guy, and he's talking, and he's like, yeah, we thought we were helping our granddaughter, and, you know, we transferred some money, and, you know, then we talked to her, and, it, you know, it's a scam, and okay. Our process is we have a even earlier before online reporting for citizens was there, our financial crimes has always been online for my career. So you just kind of click on the website, you fill it out, somebody will call you back. It basically cuts out the middleman. Rather than sending an officer out to gather up the information to send it to the detectives, it was just a streamlined process for the financial crime detectives to do it. And the old guy's like, yeah, I'm not very good with computers. So I, you know, blah, blah, blah. Can you just send somebody? And I'm like, all right, I'm going to help this old guy out. I'm going to put a call in. I'm going to get flack from the dispatcher I'm sending it to. I'm going to get flack from the officer that's going to have to go. I'm going to get flack from the street supervisor. But just in talking to him, you could really tell he just needed some help. So I put the call in, and then I happened to be that dispatcher's meal break. So I get up off the phone and I go sit down at that particular station. And I said, oh, there's my call still pending. It was only like 5 or 10 minutes old. And then that particular officer wanted to go on their meal for that patrol area. And I was like, hey, do me a favor, go talk to this old guy real quick and you'll have your meal. And he's like, oh, come on. You know? And I was like, trust me, just do it. He's a nice old guy. He just needs help.
Yeah.
Goes through the process, half hour, 40 minutes later, I'd forgotten about it because it was just a report. So he's 10-4, that sort of thing. The officer sends me a message and he goes, no, I got their money back. And I'm like, you did? Because this was back in the days before online transfers. He actually went to a Western Union.
Oh.
They gave him the code for the crooks to take it, but they never pulled the money out. So he was able to go down to that Western Union office, the officer was, and put a stop on it. So he got the money back.
That's good.
And then I sent the officer, I'm like, don't you feel good about yourself? He goes, I'm still hungry.
They didn't tip me out of that $14,000.
That one, I don't know why, that just has stuck with me. And
One of my
more prouder things that I was like, okay, you did that.
Yeah. And because especially nowadays, you know, like those online scams, especially with the older community, is just still tough, you know, because you hear people transferring their life savings and like you, and it's gone, you know. It's like, what can we do? Not much, you know, but you know, assign a detective to it and whatnot. And I mean, it's just one of those things that it's just, technology isn't always great, right? Like online banking is great, instant transfer is great, and then you have the aspect of, you know, scams and frauds and things of that nature, and it's just tough. So that's a win. I'd be proud of that one too, for sure.
So those are my cocktail hour stories, because you know, nobody wants to talk about the evil things they've heard and seen and done. So
Well, thank you for sharing with us. I know a lot of people are going to be like excited about those stories, so I do appreciate that. But one of the things that is important to anybody, you know, we talk to, or I work with a lot of aspiring dispatchers. And one of the things that I do tell people often is it is just as important that department's a good fit for you as you're a good fit for them. So choosing the right agency is important. And what are some things that you think aspiring dispatchers should consider, think about when selecting an agency?
Start with asking, you know, maybe you know somebody, maybe you don't know. Everybody knows officers or something like that. Mm-hmm. Ask them what they think about a particular agency, even if you're just talking about dispatching. Ask some random community members or some neighbors, or hey, what do you think about that? The key is when you go into those interviews, is interview them back. Prepare some questions back for them. Something I was not keen on 20 years ago, but you know, the things that you have to think about. I got into it knowing I was still making good money doing the construction stuff, but I wanted a retirement because I was not disciplined enough to do it myself.
I hear that.
that's how I got to where I'm at. But I didn't know how to go about doing it. So talk about the retirements that they offer, the benefits that they can do, and compare notes. You know, you don't have to go with the first agency that calls you. A lot of people do. Mm-hmm. Find the right one. And if you're getting answers that don't seem good to you, you know, things to think about. Holidays, everybody's going to have to work the holidays. Do they pay extra for the holidays? Mm-hmm. Or is it just, oh, nope, it's just your turn. You know, what kind of shift schedule? When I first started, we were on the four on, four off program. And you kind of rotated through. I know there's a lot of departments out there that shift bid off of seniority. You might not see a weekend for 10 years. And I'm like, who wants to work like that?
Yeah.
We are on that, I think it's called the Panama schedule, the 2-2-3, where you get every other weekend off.
Mm.
It's like you work Monday, Tuesday, you're off the Wednesday, Thursday, you work the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the next week it flips.
Okay. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So then we're off Monday, Tuesday, we work the Wednesday, Thursday, and the Friday, Saturday, Sunday is off. So out of you get every other weekend off, scheduled off. So it really helps with life and that sort of thing.
Mm. That's so interesting that the more I talk to people, you learn like all these different ways that people are doing it. Like I've always been in seniority base, and you're right. Like weekends off are few and far between. My first agency, we'd sign up once a year. At my current agency, we sign up every 4 months. So there's a little more wiggle room to get a weekend off because I'm right in the middle seniority wise at this agency. And one of the things that is always a hot topic in centers is seniority. You know, like I've earned the idea that I've earned this by being here this long, so I get this, the better schedule, you know. And one of the realities is when we're talking about retention, when we're talking about people being happy with the work they're doing, finding ways to, you know, do this type of scheduling that you guys are doing where everyone is getting a piece of the weekend. Everyone is getting, you know, a good shift off every couple weeks, like supervisors and, you know, command staff who aren't thinking this way, aren't finding ways to make everyone happy sometimes. You know, we're missing an opportunity to let our people, even at the bottom of our seniority list, know, hey, we appreciate the work you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tricky. Our seniority list is kind of okay. It really doesn't get you much until it comes to the time for the holidays. Mm. We can bid out our leave. You can get a certain chunk of leave for the next year. We have the annual calendars leave sign up, but the blackout days are the major holidays, the Christmases, the Thanksgivings, that sort of thing. And those, as you get closer to the holiday, depending upon who's on what shift, does get bid out on a seniority basis, but that's about it for us for seniority. We run two night shifts and two day shifts straight. Mm-hmm. There's no rotating for us or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of whatever your shift you're on, you're just kind of working it throughout the year. Mm-hmm. So there's no shift bids. There's nothing like that. So some people, you know, poo-poo it because there's not a lot of seniority-based things. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately the job's the job. And you get there and all of a sudden, you know, fortunately for me, I haven't worked at Christmas in, well, how old are my kids? My kids are 14. So I haven't worked at Christmas in 14 years. I've just been fortunate. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm like usually every other. I'll get like Thanksgiving off 1 year and then like Christmas Eve off the next. And so it flip-flops a lot, which, you know, I think I'm very unique in my experience in dispatch. You know, every agency while I'm at it, they've been fully staffed. So I haven't experienced a lot of mandated overtimes, a lot of forced overtimes, a lot of forced ins on holidays that I know is impacting a lot of our centers. Mm-hmm. But it all comes down to retention. How are we keeping our people happy? What are the things that we're doing in our centers to make people want to stay, because the job's hard enough, you know? How are we really letting our people know that we care about them and appreciate the work they're doing. And I think finding creative ways with the schedules and things of that nature is really helpful in the long run.
Yeah. Retention, COVID killed us with retention. It's always been bad,
but
yeah, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of 160 positions. Mm-hmm. Staffing wise, we might be down 60.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get. We do have a new director, and we do have a new assistant director who've come on the last 4 or 5 months, and they're trying mm-hmm. to streamline the hiring process and revamp it, see what can be taken out, what can be added in, that sort of thing. So it's going to take some time, but it takes so long to build people up. It's hard to get them in as fast as they're leaving or retiring anymore. So,
Yeah, it's true. I mean, my session, I talked about it a little bit in the intro, at Calnina, my first session is on the application process and what are some changes, that we can make to our standard process that's typical, you know, to make that long process feel good to people who are having to go through it. And, you know, there's some things we can't change, you know. Our city HR departments are going to move at the speed they're going to move at. And all we can really do is harass them a bit, you know, but they're going to move as fast as they're going to move. Backgrounders, you know, how fast they get through that process, how backlogged they are. And usually they're doing the officers as well. They're doing the dispatchers, and I'm sure they're doing the firefighters too. So that backlog process, we can't really control, but we could poke them a little bit. Really focusing on the things we can control, because they are and should be, like we said earlier, looking at multiple agencies, right? Like figuring out which agency works for them and asking questions and what makes our agency the one to pick. You know, what are we doing that tells this person we value them? And if we don't have an answer to that question, we're probably failing in the application portion, which leads to failure in our retention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, far as the workers on the floor, you know, push for things like shift differential and push, you know, see if you can add on it. It's hard based upon where your status and that sort of thing based per state. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate enough that we're in a uniform retirement in Fairfax.
Oh, nice.
So we get the same retirement the firefighters get, 25 years and you're eligible. Doesn't matter. A lot of places, everything else in Virginia is age plus years of service has to equal a certain number. But I was originally hired by the police department, and there was already turmoil there before I got there. And a couple of years later, we became our own agency. Out the police department, because every time there was a budget crunch, the police department was like, well, we need some money. There's this communications money. Let's take it and move it over here to the SWAT team, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That really turned into be an issue. So
I can.
So through the course of it, the senior people and the powers that be then got us our own agency, and the fire department, the fire union says, hey, these guys do this kind of work. Let's put them in with our retirement system. So that's about one of the major benefits we have to the other people around us, because everybody else is in the Virginia retirement system, which is runs through the state. So that's a plus one for Fairfax, by the way.
Heck yeah. That is awesome. You know, one of the things that, you know, I promote with like my reels, my content, whatever, is, you know, our vacancy issues, and our reclassification, fight that's going on, you know, across states. And one of the things that people say is like, oh, like one person commented, they're like, what'd that get you? But a discount at 7-Eleven. And it's just like, well, no, I mean, it's not the answer, right? It's not the answer to the problem. It's a step, you know, mm-hmm. having that classification gives us those, you know, bargaining rights, those, you know, footnotes that when we're trying to get better retirement and better benefits for us in the long run, having that status helps us do that. And I think that's that's the important part when we talk about reclassification, you know, across the states, is it's not gonna solve any problem. It's just giving us a little more fighting power when we're going to these debates that, you know, look, we are considered first responders. We should get the same benefits as our counterparts who, you know, I'm in a union that I was in a union with the officers at my last agency, but at this one, we are coupled with kind of records instead. And the issue that we have with that is our work schedule is more similar to an officer than it is to a records clerk, because they're, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, 8-hour day, we're 365 days, 12-hour shifts, you know, shift work. And it's just, they're not equal. And those are the realities that we're talking about fixing and making equal when we're talking about, you know, reclassification and retirement. You know, I met someone at Calnina who said 2% of dispatchers retire. 2%.
Project Retains, that started that thing. '96 was the first Project Retains that did the status on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not surprised it's fallen. Then it was, mm-hmm. then it was 5%. 5% of dispatchers that went into the field went on through their career to retire. Yeah. And where police and firemen are almost up at 95%. And it's
exactly
that difference. And in about 2014, they redid it, and the numbers had stayed about the same. I have been curious of what COVID had done to it, and I'm not surprised it's dropped down to 2 or 3%.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm sure that probably is a study they were referring to. So this is all second, third hand information from that individual. But there's a reason like that's happening, that we're not staying in this job for, you know, 30, 40 years. And there are folks who are doing it, and that's amazing. But we got to give people a reason to stay in this tough job. And, you know, we got to give them benefits. We got to give them access to, you know, mental health services, therapy, you know, all those things, the same as our firefighters and our police officers. And that shift will help us raise that 2% up to a reasonable number, because that means our retention is higher. You know, people are staying in the job. You know, mm-hmm. the whole industry as a whole would balance out a bit if we could make some of these benefits a reality.
Oh yeah, yeah. You definitely need it. You touched on it, but yeah, the support. We're not robots. It's impossible to do this job forever and not be affected. Mm-hmm. Even the toughest hardcore pain in the butt like myself, you know, it wears on you. And you know, my wife says you've gone from a short fuse to almost no fuse anymore. And, you know, let's, you know, start working on you for a little bit. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. Speaking of your wife, you met your wife working at Fairfax County. What does that look like? And how do you manage a relationship in the center, let alone the relationship where both of you are doing this tough job?
So we both got started around the same time. She started in January of 2002. I was hired in August of 2002. And we both were in other relationships when we had started. But again, based on the schedule we had at the time, I won't really speak for her. All right. So she was in another relationship. It was her high school relationship that turned into a long distance relationship mm-hmm. between colleges and that sort of thing. And then it turned into just something she realized she wasn't going to get what ultimately mm-hmm. she wanted out of the relationship. And,
yeah. and you were like, look, I got this stripper hitting me up. So
right. So she was there, and I was in a relationship, and she was more corporate based and that sort of thing. And so she didn't understand the public safety side. And once I left the sales and the construction side of it and got into the public safety shift schedule, it turned into a real issue for her. Mm-hmm. And so it was a non-productive relationship for me too. Mm-hmm. So, and then that came out. But in the meantime, without without the romantic side of it, we had built this friendship. So, you know, we'd have 4 days off, and you're off the way the rotation schedule worked at the time, the four on, the four off, you're off Monday through Thursday. Mm-hmm. And none of your other friends are off. So who are you going to hang out with? You hang out with your squad mates. We would just go with a collective 5-10 of us, whatever. We go watch a movie one day. Mm-hmm. Then the next week we're off. We take one day and we're having a barbecue at somebody's house. And then mm-hmm. the next week, you know, you take one day and you're bowling. Mm-hmm. And so you built these relationships. So we liked each other. We were friends and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I'll remember it. I was at work one night. She had taken off to go with her friends and they'd gone out, and she called in thinking it was funny, you know, to rub it in that we were off. And I remember she mentioned that she met this guy, and I instantly got this like turn in my gut going, mm-hmm. that's not right. And then I spent the rest of the night going, well, how dare you think that, you know, it's none of your business. It's her personal life. And so you know, change gears and let's talk it out. I ultimately, she says I didn't ruin her life, but I still remind her everything. I ruined her life. So that relationship had ended. She was making plans to move to Italy. She wanted to move to Italy. Mm-hmm. And so every once in a while I go, sorry, you're not in the Mediterranean sipping wine with that Italian hunk or whatever. And she just rolls her eyes and tells me to go away. But back to your question. The first 3 years of our so we were friends, and then we got into the relationship. The first 3 years of our relationship, we were together 24/7.
Yeah.
We, you know, you work together, you live together, you're vacationing together, stuff like that. And so we meshed well. And then when family and stuff kind of came into it, we'd gotten married and there was opportunity for a promotional process that I went out for it. And mm-hmm. the county, another benefit that our county has is it creates a job share position mm-hmm. where you're almost like a part-time employee, but you still get benefits. You still get a smaller retirement. You still get health insurance, that sort of thing. But once we're married, she was under mine anyway. Mm-hmm. But she's technically a part-time, but she can pick up overtime because there's always overtime. And mm-hmm. but she was able to stay home and raise our kids for the most part.
Yeah,
some help with some family on some days when they were little, and a sitter occasionally. But she would work the day work, I would work the night work,
mm-hmm.
and we just have to cover a couple hours. Our kids are old enough now; they can stay home. sort of thing, but yeah. that's how we balanced it. So, you know, the commuting time, we're about 51 miles from home to work, so mm-hmm. you know, you have a good hour drive and then a switch time, so it's about 4 hours that we would do that. That's how we've managed.
Yeah.
It's been a benefit. I don't think I would still be in this job without her. Mm-hmm. Because we feed off of each other. We're each other's sounding boards. We're each other's venting personality, that sort of thing. And she's, you know, I tell the agency they promoted the wrong one of us. You know, it should have been her doing the supervisor stuff and me staying home with the kids. But mm-hmm. the agency was better off. But it's worked out fine for us. So
that's wonderful. And do you think that having a partner who gets it, mm-hmm. you know, the tough days and, you know, the tough calls and things like that, that creates an environment where you're able to, you know, not keep things bottled up. You know, you're able to express, you know, we don't necessarily want to like trauma dump on our partners or anything like that, but just they get it. And has that been helpful for you folks?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a certain type of call that she's taken several of. Mm-hmm. Where people go to sleep with their children and all of a sudden they roll over and the blankets cover them or whatever. And then they wake up and they realize it. She's had three in her career where the parents wake up in the middle of the night screaming because they have essentially not purposely killed their child.
Yeah.
And that's one of her worst fears when we started our family and that sort of thing. She's like, the kid will never sleep in the bed with us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I get it. They're not going to sleep in between us and that sort of thing. So that's one that still triggers her.
Yeah. Something like that comes up. You know, it's interesting that you say that because that's 911, right? Like you never know what kind of call is going to hang on you. And then as you grow, as you change, you know, you start a family, you do those things. Something that didn't trigger you before might be a trigger now. And you remember, you know, your calls when you're making decisions. Like even I had a call where just simply like boyfriend broke in, never lived there, was ex-boyfriend. And I like went around my house like extra, like two or three times that night, locking up my house again, even though like I knew I'd locked up. But like those things, when you play them back and you remember them and you hear them, contribute to the decisions you make in your life, in your parenting and your, you know, security. Well, my partner, like she would always go, you know, we live in an apartment setting and she would always go like change the laundry, go to the mailbox without the phone. And I'm like, can you please just take your phone? So many things could happen from here to the mailbox. Like, you know, yeah. And that's, you know, that's my junk. That's my reality from my line of work. But it's the same kind of thing with this call that would trigger her, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Our kids now, so they'll go to the movies or the skating rink with their friends or something mm-hmm. like that. And you know, Christy grills them. She's like, okay, do you know where your exits are? Okay. Do you have an escape plan? Do you know where your meeting points are? And they just, mm-hmm. okay, we get it.
So. It's so true. It's so, so true. You reassure her that it's a reality for all of us. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, as we come to a close, as we wrap everything up, you know, the one question that I ask everybody who comes onto the show is, what advice would you give someone who's considering a career as a dispatcher?
Do it. It's job security. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to ever worry about layoffs or that sort of thing. For the most part, I'm sure some agencies or something like that may happen, but for the most part, everybody's understaffed, so there's always there. Pick the right department that works for you. Be willing to work with them and become an advocate. Just don't sit back and let the others be the voice. Mm-hmm. Even in the beginning, if you know there's a lot of introverts in this job, but even if you're not comfortable with speaking up or something like that, listen to other people talk around you and keep those notes of just, okay, this benefited them or planning for their retirement. Okay, let me copy that. Another one, because I'm a supervisor, don't come to your supervisor with a problem that you don't have an answer for. Even if it's the wrong answer, at least you came with a solution. I always, you know, helps people be involved in the process, because sometimes we don't have the answers and you come up with a solution. Mm-hmm. We're like, I like that. Let's try it. Let's run it up the ladder, see what they say.
Yeah.
I've gotten more involved here in the last 5-6 years with the union and the process. We just became a collective bargaining eligible state. We used to be a right to work state. So it was more, the union was more of a political advocacy group, and you had to build relationships with the politicians and that sort of thing to kind of get to discuss with them and get them to realize why you would need certain benefits. And now it's collective bargaining eligible. But I've gone to conferences and I've gone to state legislatures, and you sit there and you have conversations. They don't know what 911 is. They know what 911 is when they need it and pick it up and make the phone call. Mm-hmm. They don't actually know what we do. Mm-hmm. Get involved, talk to them, invite them into your center and have them sit down. We just had a board of supervisors member came and sat with my wife for part of her thing. And the guy was like, he was blown away. He was only there for like 45 minutes. He's like, this is fascinating.
Yeah, heck yeah.
So, but ultimately, in the end, be proud of what you do. Mm. Get rid of that term, I'm just a dispatcher. Every time I'll throw mouse pads at people if they say it. If I hear them say it over the phone, I throw a mouse pad at them. Sorry, Drew.
he's kidding. Hypothetically, he throws it. He didn't.
Yeah, get rid of that. You're not just a dispatcher. You are part of the public safety chain. but be proud of what you do. It's not mm-hmm. everybody that can do it. Mm-hmm. And it's not everybody that can do it for a really long time. So mm-hmm. what you do, what you can, help out, be proud.
Awesome. Well, RJ, thank you so much for jumping on with me. I know it's late where you are, so I really do appreciate it. And thanks.
No problem. I appreciate it. And I thank you. I stumbled across your podcast here. And once I heard that, your tagline there, you know, the world needs more dispatchers. I'm like, mm-hmm. she's on to something. And I binge watched like five of them that night. And I don't know if I've helped. My goal out of this was to make you not want to run a magnet over the hard drive at the end of the interview. So hopefully I've done that, but you are on to something, and thank you for being this voice and making it better for us. In the long run, you're going to be remembered. So be awesome. Proud.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. And no magnet over the hard drive. This is a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I say it all the time, but I love the podcast because I get to, like, before this goes out, I get to absorb it all first. So it's like dibs, which is, you know, it's a lot of fun for me. So I appreciate you for wanting to come on. And wanting to share your journey. And I know it's going to help so many people.
Appreciate it. Come out to the East Coast sometime. All right. You know,
we're trying to get out there. I promise. We're going to try to get out to, North Carolina, pretty soon. So maybe we can make a little loop, and hit everybody up. So
thank you.
RJ, thank you so much. And I'll be right back with you.
Okay.
All right, everybody, that was another amazing episode here at Let's Talk Dispatch. Again, RJ, thank you so much for being willing to come out and chat with me, share your story. And honestly, your advice for aspiring dispatchers is like perfect. Like, be an advocate. And it doesn't mean you have to create a podcast or, you know, a channel or anything like that. It doesn't have to be that extreme. Just be an advocate for yourself, be an advocate for your center, and impact the dispatch community that you're working in every day. And that goes a long way for your coworkers, for yourself, for your career as a dispatcher. And yeah, get involved with your reclassification efforts, you know, get involved with these higher reps who are making decisions based on not knowing much about the actual job that we do. All of that advocating goes such a long way, and it's needed. So again, thank you all so much for joining me. If you're interested in coming on the show, head to theraspydispatcher.com, as well as check out our merch. All of our other resources can all be found there. Until next time, stay raspy, everybody. Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Dispatch podcast. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're interested in becoming a guest on the show, or maybe even submitting your own story, you can do all that and more at theraspydispatcher.com. Until next time, stay raspy.